What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 105. Today we're going to be doing a FODMAP diet guide. So if you ever heard of FODMAPs and we're kind of interested in what that's all about and what a low FODMAP diet looks like, continue listening to this podcast. We'll go over all that. We've pretty much touched on every diet out there now, but we haven't touched on this one yet. I think this might be the last one. So yeah, we're going to go over that. But first, the article of the week this week is all about sourdough bread. If you know me, you know I'm a low-carb guy. This is pretty much a low-carb podcast for the most part. But we understand that, you know, people love bread, and bread is a huge part of a lot of people's diet. So I get asked a lot of the time, what's the best bread out there? You know, should I get whole grain? Should I get wheat? Should I get white? All this type of stuff. And the one bread I usually recommend for a lot of people is sourdough bread. And that's because sourdough goes through fermentation, and fermentation is just a form of kind of pre-processing, and it helps eliminate a lot of the stuff, the bad stuff in bread that I don't like. So this week, the article is called Sourdough Fermentation Degrades Wheat Alpha Amylase, Trypsin Inhibitor, and Reduces Pro-Inflammatory Activity. And you can find this article, it's actually pretty long, but you can just read the abstract and get the gist of it on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com. But Tom, do you want to just briefly touch on the article real quick?
Yeah, so whenever you come across like a big study like this, if it seems a little intimidating and you don't want to read it all, I suggest, like what Tyson said, read the abstract, maybe go down to the bottom, read the conclusion, and maybe read some like the results and discussions depending. But like abstract and conclusion are like two great places if you don't want to read through the entire study. But yeah, like moving on to the actual study. So one thing that they found is, when you actually ferment the bread through like the sourdough fermentation process, there's a lot lower there's a lot fewer cytokines released from your body in response to that. So that means you're getting a lot less inflammation in response to this. That's true for both people that have celiac disease and people that aren't, and non-celiac wheat sensitivity. So like both types of people. So everybody is somewhat sensitive to these wheat, mm-hmm. like glutens and stuff like that. So this just kind of goes to show you like that ancestral wisdom. Like sourdough bread is one of the oldest breads. And sourdough started becoming less popular around like 1870s. And that's when there was baker's yeast added. So they didn't have to do this whole fermentation process to make bread. So sourdough bread is an old school type of bread. And that just goes to show our ancestors knew what's up. They knew how to eat bread to not make them get fat and sick off of it. That sourdough fermentation process destroys a lot of the amylase, trypsin inhibitors, and that makes it so much better to eat. So sourdough bread is the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that, I don't know, you touched on ancient knowledge and just fermentation. It's like really easy to ferment shit. Like it's not technical at all. If you want to just ferment milk, it's not clean, it's not sanitary, but go leave your milk outside or leave it sitting on the counter or in a jar for like a couple days and it'll ferment. Like all fermentation means is kind of you're giving bacteria time to do its job. And this bacteria goes through and takes out, like Tom mentioned, celiac disease, which is when someone has a real like adverse effect to gluten, which is a protein found in wheat products. Pretty much gluten and wheat is just trash. Everyone is sensitive to it. It's just to what degree, you know? And but yeah, fermentation goes through and allows these bacteria to eat the gluten. Literally, they'll get rid of it. They'll digest it. And there's other things in there, and that reduces the inflammation caused by eating that bread. So I'm very pro sourdough. I mean, don't get it twisted. If you eat a sourdough sandwich, it doesn't automatically make the sandwich healthy. Like, you're still going to get all that glucose from the bread eventually hitting the bloodstream. But it's kind of a lesser of two evils, and people have to live their normal lives, and they need access to bread. Some people do, at least. You know, I personally don't. But I get that people like to live lives socially, and eating bread is kind of part of that. So if you are, and this is just kind of the tip, go for sourdough. If you want to make your own bread, make your own sourdough bread, and that's kind of the best option out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not a big fan of bread. I mean, there's really not a lot of nutrition to it. It's high carb. A lot of it is, like, heavily sprayed with, like, pesticides and stuff like that. So I'm definitely not pro-bread, but if you are going to eat bread, sourdough is a way to go, just because at least you won't have to deal with all those anti-nutrients, all that gluten, and this, like, pro-inflammatory food.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have a whole podcast on gluten if you want to go back and listen to it. It's real technical. It's about, I think it's like what's bad about donuts, something like that. So you
yeah,
can go back.
No, it's a donut episode.
It's a donut episode. Yeah. So go back and look at that and listen to it if you like. But yeah, so that's the article of the week this week. Let's get into this week's podcast, which is a FODMAP diet. And you would think, like, Tom was surprised that I really didn't know a lot about the FODMAP diet. Like, I knew the term, but I really didn't know a lot. And because, like, in your world, you said you heard it more than me, I guess.
Well, I'm kind of surprised. I had a conversation with somebody else who I just, like, brought up FODMAPs, like, in our conversation. And he had no idea what I was talking about either. And, you know, he knows his nutritional stuff. So it's not like I was just talking to some, like, random stranger on the street. And I was really surprised, like, he didn't know about him either. I was like, man, I've been hearing about this stuff for, like, the longest time. So just to kind of go into it a little bit, FODMAP stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, which basically just means fermentable carbohydrates.
Yeah, so oligosaccharides is just, think of that as a carb. You know what I mean? They're pretty much small, hard to digest carbohydrates that go through our small intestines undigested, which is normally where things do get digested, and they hit our large intestines pretty much intact, and that's where they get fermented by all the bacteria there. So this does tie into last week's podcast a little bit, because we talked about milk, and the sugar in milk is lactose, and lactose is a FODMAP, so it's a disaccharide. It's a combination of glucose and galactose. So that's why lactose can cause problems for people, especially if you're lactose intolerant, is the lactose hits your large intestines intact and gets fermented there, causing all those problems of, like, bloating, just IBS symptoms, you know, all that type of stuff. And that's why this diet is really commonly prescribed to people with IBS. It's kind of the one-trick pony. Like, it eliminates a lot of foods that can cause digestive problems.
Yeah, so the reason that it causes, like, IBS is because since these foods are not really that digestible, your microbiome in your large intestine is just having a party. Now they're just getting all these foods that it wouldn't normally get. So as a result of that, it's producing a ton of methane that leads to gas, that leads to bloating. And then as a result of that, water is going to start flooding into your large intestine. What's the next thing that happens after that? Diarrhea. Not a good thing. So it just leads to all sorts of just digestive gas problems, stuff that nobody really wants to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. So to go through just some of the common, like, FODMAP foods, like, you know, what do you want to really cut out? The big one is fructose. So fructose is just a simple sugar found in many fruits and vegetables. And it's also what makes up, like, table sugar. Table sugar is half glucose, half fructose. So fructose can lead to problems. Like I talked about earlier, lactose, which is milk sugar, that can lead to problems. And another one is called fructans. And this is found in many foods, including grains like wheat, rye, barley, that type of stuff. Another one is galactans, which is found in legumes. So think of just beans, you know, whatever type of bean you're thinking about. And then, like Tom said, you said polyols? Is that how you pronounced it?
Polyols,
got it. So those are sugar alcohols. Things like xylitol, sorbitol, maltitol, stuff like that. And though you do find those naturally in fruit and vegetables, but they're also obviously being created, you know, in more recent years to add it to, like, low-carb foods, because they do taste sweet, but they don't really count towards carbohydrates because they don't get digested in the small intestines. But that leads to the problem with the FODMAP because they do cause problems in the large intestines.
So one thing with the polyols is, like, yeah, like Tyson said, they have gained in popularity a lot lately. And especially when it comes to like keto desserts. If you're trying to make some keto brownies, my fiance makes some like delicious keto like cheesecake, and she uses like one of these, and you know, I can kind of tell, like the next day I can kind of feel it. It's like, yeah, you know, you got to be kind of careful with these sweeteners and stuff like that, especially if you're trying to be doing them all the time. Like, not only do they can still spike your insulin levels, but they can cause like a lot of gastric and intestinal distress.
Yeah, and that's something to think about. You know, if you're whatever half educated in diet and nutrition, the one you think about when it turns to carbohydrates is blood sugar spikes and insulin response. That's kind of what people think about as far as the boogeyman with carbohydrates. But there is a whole other aspect to it in this sense, that carbs that aren't easily digested that can cause problems. So even though something, say, like xylitol, which is, you know, low-carb sweetener used in, like Tom said, a lot of desserts, does it kind of negate the blood sugar rise? Yes, it does. Does it kind of negate the insulin response? Yes, it does. It's not as dramatic, but there's other aspects of carbohydrates that lead to problems like this. So people don't really think about that, but there's other things to think about, not just blood sugar rise when thinking about carbohydrates.
Yeah, and then there's other foods, too, that people think are, like, really super healthy and you can eat all the time. And one of those foods that comes to mind is garlic. Not only just garlic, onions. There's another one that's really similar to, I think it's called shallots, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like onions and garlic, they're like low-carb foods. So when I used to be making like hamburgers and stuff like that before I like really started going more carnivore, I would make a lot of onions to go with them. I'd be making like omelets and stuff with like some onions and stuff too. And then I noticed like I'd be getting gassy afterwards. I'm like, so what's going on here? And that's what first turned me on to this whole FODMAP thing. I was like, oh, there are issues with onions. Because onions have been around for a really long time. Like, onions and garlic, humans have been eating those a lot longer than we have with, say, something like broccoli. So I was thinking that's a safer vegetable to go with. But no, they still have their problems. Yeah, they're high in these FODMAPs, so they do lead to that gas, that bloating, those type of issues.
Yeah, I have noticed that, too, with onions and... Even though, yeah, we've been pretty low-carb, almost carnivore for a long time, I do like onions. And sometimes I'll go to an Indian restaurant and get kind of, it's lamb and onion dish type thing. And it's literally just grilled lamb and grilled onions. And I do notice sometimes that if I eat all the onions, which would be a lot, I do notice a little bloating afterwards. And I just kind of associate it with just with the vegetables in general. And I'm like, oh, you know, I just don't really need this in my diet. But it probably is due to the FODMAP content in onions.
Yeah, I mean, those are some of the higher FODMAP-containing foods. I mean, the biggest one is going to be beans. Like, I feel like most people already know that. Like, that's everybody obvious. Knows that beans lead to gas and, like, bloating and stuff like that. So, I mean, like, that's the biggest one. But, yeah, onions are up there. Garlic would be up there, but, like, garlic has such a strong flavor that you can't really eat enough of it to really make a noticeable difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're not sitting there eating, like, you know, four cloves of garlic with a meal. Like, you know, you're just, like, barely sprinkling some powder, maybe mincing a little bit in with your meal. You're not eating, like, half a pound of that.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you are, man, good luck. But yeah, so pretty much the FODMAP diet guide and what you can use it for, it's used pretty much like an elimination diet. And I didn't know this, but looking into it, the FODMAP diet is very similar to the carnivore diet. Carnivore diet is pretty much like FODMAP on steroids. And you can use this if you're going through, this is probably why the carnivore diet is so good for people with autoimmune issues and like IBS, is it really lets your gut heal. So if you have IBS symptoms and, you know, you're just suffering from, and that can be shit that bothers you every day. Like, it can be really, it can really affect your life, you know, if that's something you deal with. Go through this, eliminate all the wheat, eliminate dairy, eliminate fruits, eliminate bulk of vegetables. Some vegetables on this list they say are okay, low in FODMAPs. I would just cut out all of them. And then what you do is you reintroduce these foods one at a time after you've had all your symptoms subside, and you see if you have a reaction. And if you don't have a reaction, say, to whatever, asparagus, then you can, you know, if you like asparagus, you bring it back into your diet. If you don't have reactions to blackberries, okay, then you bring it back in the diet. But that's what this FODMAP diet can do. Cut out all these foods that have these carbohydrates in them, and then just reintroduce them one by one to see how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And, I mean, these are only estimates, but there's about 14% of people in the U.S. have IBS. Most of them are probably undiagnosed, because, I mean, most people just think like, hey, that's part of my daily life, or they're too embarrassed to go to the doctor and get a diagnosis for that.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what the doctors are going to tell you. I highly doubt that most doctors are really going to recommend a low FODMAP diet. Because like Tyson just said, like a low FODMAP diet, the best one out there is going to be a carnivore one. And most doctors aren't on board with that. And yeah, like there's so many foods that are high in FODMAPs that I see this so much because I'm in that running world. And we were talking about fructose. So, like, a lot of runners are out there eating fruit. I've seen runners drinking chocolate milk while they're out there running. I'm like, that's disgusting. I don't know how you're doing that. But there's all these different foods out there. And just the fructose alone. So even if you aren't doing, like, fruit, people are drinking soda out there that's made with high fructose corn syrup. That means there's a lot of fructose in that. There's a lot of, like, gels and just other just, like, candy out there that's going to be high in like high fructose corn syrup or just a lot of fructose in general. And that's such a bad idea. Like, yeah, you can still look good if you're eating a diet high in FODMAPs, but if you're eating this while you're trying to perform, you're going to get gas, you're going to get bloated. If that blood flow is already going to go to your digestive system alone just because you're running and like now you're trying to compete for blood with your muscles and your digestive system. Now you're going to be competing for water too, because that water's got to flow into your large intestine to kind of make up for that gas and stuff, and that could lead to diarrhea. Like, man, that just seems like a disaster just waiting to happen. And I'm amazed at how many people I see out there running, like, during races and, like, training runs. They're just eating all these, like, shitty foods, and then they're complaining about a stomach ache. They'll run, they'll stop because their stomach hurts. They'll eat some more of the same crappy food because they just think, like, they need more energy, and it's like, no, man. You just need to be on a better diet.
Yeah, I mean, and it sucks to have a stomach ache or even, like, digestive issues when you're 15 miles into a trail. Like, where are you supposed to go, you know?
Yeah, man, I see that all the time. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, it was funny. I pulled this out, like, this little quote. I read an article about FODMAPs, and it was pretty extensive, really. It was kind of like a one-stop shop I needed to cover everything. But the very end of this article I had to pull because I just thought it was hilarious. So this is the end of the quote, or end of the article that I pulled out. So it says, bottom line, it's important to remember that many high FODMAP foods, especially those in the O category, are extremely healthy and should not be eliminated entirely in the long run, end quote. And so the O category, those are all the carbohydrates. And so, like, what this article did, it spent like 10 pages talking about all the bad shit that this food does to you. All these symptoms, all this science saying, yes, it does happen to the vast majority of people. And then at the very end, they end with, even though it caused all this stuff, make sure to still eat it. And I was like, wow. It's something called cognitive dissonance. They pretty much, like, the thought of grains, beans, and vegetables being unhealthy, like, made them uncomfortable. So even though they just wrote a whole paper saying they were, their conclusion was the exact opposite. And I was just like, man, that is the system we're living in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, come on now. You got to be able to think critically. Like, I mean, you're obviously a smart person. You know a lot. But if you can't just critically think about that and just realize, like, how stupid that sounds, like, come on now. What are you doing writing this article?
Yeah, it blew my mind. But, I mean, whatever makes sense. Like, you can't say wheat's unhealthy. You can't say vegetables are unhealthy. It's just, it's like a huge no-no, and it's crazy to me. But yeah, so that's a FODMAP diet in general. It's damn near the carnivore diet. It's eliminate grains, eliminate dairy, eliminate these carbohydrate sources that cause problems, and see how you feel. I think the vast majority of people would do great on a low FODMAP diet. And something that's kind of different than low FODMAP and carnivore is that a low FODMAP does allow various nuts and seeds, which I personally don't agree with. I wouldn't include those in the diet for various reasons, but obviously, some people do fine on nuts and seeds and that type of stuff. So, kind of, you let your digestive system tell you, I guess, if you do well with those or not, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. But nuts and seeds are generally really high in lectins, and that can also lead to like gastric issues. So, I mean, you're basically just trading like one anti-nutrient for like another.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like I notice if I eat too many almonds or something like that, like I'll get a stomach ache. Like, so I don't really do almonds or cashews or walnuts very often.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I read the same article as you or if it was just a similar one. So I came across something that was like really similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it said at the bottom, like, oh, hey, you shouldn't like eliminate these type of foods because they're really good for your gut bacteria. It's like, but wait, isn't it that you're feeding these gut bacteria and that's what's causing all these issues? So why would you want to feed these gut bacteria? Like, it didn't make any sense to me.
Oh, yeah, because that's the hot keyword, is that you have to feed our gut bacteria. They don't know. Like, they're not connecting the dots.
It's like, well, how do you know you're feeding the right ones and not the wrong ones and stuff like that? Like, if you're obviously, if you're feeding these ones and they're giving you issues, maybe you should stop feeding them.
Yeah, it's a trip, man. It's a... I don't know. I don't know how many people are actually going to read those articles and then read that last sentence and realize it's all bullshit. Like, but, or they're just going to believe it hook, line, and sinker, like be sheep and just be like, okay, I guess I can't cut out, you know, wheat. I guess I can't cut out beans. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, no, you're not destined just to, like, you don't have to choose between good health and like gas, bloating, and diarrhea.
No.
Like, you can have both. You can be gas free and be healthy. Like, you can. You don't have to choose.
Yeah, no, you really don't. Yeah, you just make the right decision with your diet, you'll be fine. So yeah, so that's a FODMAP diet. Hope you guys learned something. I did. I didn't know much about it, but I do totally approve of a low FODMAP diet. So if you're out there and you're like, what does Tyson think? It's Tyson approved for sure. And yeah, now I know.
Yeah, so I guess we can just kind of go into some of the vegetables that are really high in FODMAPs that you might not really consider. Because these are some of the ones that might be a little sneaky.
Okay.
Like stuff like bell peppers, bok choy, carrots, celery, cucumbers, eggplant, ginger, green beans, kale, lettuce, you know, all those like healthy leafy greens, potatoes, radishes, onions, squash, tomatoes, sweet potatoes, yams, and zucchini. So a lot of those foods are like really low-carb, keto-approved, but you can still have issues in another area just because they're high in FODMAPs. Like, onions and garlic are really high in them, I've definitely noticed. I used to eat a lot of squash and zucchini and bell peppers and didn't really notice anything off of those. Kind of surprised. Sweet potatoes and potatoes, those are kind of higher, too. I have noticed a difference with those. But a lot of this is going to be kind of up to the individual.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like, a low FODMAP diet is going to eliminate the vast majority of food groups besides, like, meat and eggs. That's just the gist of it. Like, if you want to be careful with the FODMAPs, just eat steak and eggs and say you're carnivore.
Yeah, I mean, if you're replacing some sweet potato with some fatty cut of meat, like, now you're getting, you're replacing a nutrient-poor food high in FODMAPs with a nutrient-dense food high in a bunch of proteins, amino acids, healthy fats, fat-soluble vitamins. It's definitely a good trade.
Yeah, it's a good trade every time. Is there anything else you want to touch on with FODMAPs, or you think that's good?
I think we pretty much covered everything. I think people know what's up, know what foods to avoid, and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, me too. So yeah, so that's it. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's how new listeners can come find us. You can find us anywhere podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy, healthy week.